As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm now joined by JJ Bull the Bullet.
Hello.
Hello there, how are you?
Good, forgot you keep calling me that.
Well, that's your name. And of course, also joining us is Sebastian Stafford-Blaw. Hello, Seb.
Hello, Joe.
Lovely job. So much football to discuss this weekend. But first, let me say, if you are watching this on YouTube, you'll notice that these two strapping young men are wearing some delightful shirts. JJ there sporting the metronome. That, and for listeners, that is a lovely illustration of Andrea Pirlo with a kind of automaton's body with a metronome in. And Seb is wearing the small badge version of the Terminator shirt, which is Erling Haaland as a Terminator. Now, these are part of the...
Well, not a Terminator.
Well, let's... I mean, to be honest, if we really want to dig down into the lore of the Terminator films, then anyone listening will know that there are many Terminators. Arnie was simply one that was sent back. And of course, later, there was the one that could morph, Terminator 2, can't remember his name. He was scarier with his sword arm.
Graham,
the Terminator, yeah. And of course, in future episodes, there were different Terminators. So do...
Yeah, but Erling Haaland, check out. He's not just a Terminator. He is, in this instance, the Terminator.
Fine.
It's contextual.
Yes. Are there any friendly Terminators? Are there any friendly?
Arnie.
Like with a
Arnie's a friendly Terminator.
Yeah. I've not really seen Terminator, really.
He gives money to charity.
You've never seen the film Terminator?
No, I have, but I've always been...
Fine. You know what? I think we should engender here a spirit at TIFO where we don't make fun of people for not having seen films that they definitely should have seen.
I have seen it. I don't remember it. I've seen it lots of times, but always under the influence of something. So then
it's the worst thing when you're talking to people and then they say, what, you haven't heard that band or you haven't seen that film, and then you feel small.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. It is a good film, though. You should watch it when you're awake.
I've seen most of Terminator 2, but I don't remember what happens.
Fine, yeah. Anyway, these shirts are from the literal nickname series of TIFO merchandise. And you can visit shop.tifofootball.com to check them out in greater detail and probably purchase one for yourself, for your friends or family, or even send one to someone you don't know for fun. Just put a random address in there and say, random act of kindness, money for me. Money for me, please. Money for me.
A friendly Terminator would do that, I think.
Arnie.
Yeah,
Arnie
well, no, but a friendly Terminator, you know, just a random act of kindness.
Arnie is a friendly Terminator. I'm not going to do this again. Right, other things. There's so much to discuss today outside of Terminator. We've got Liverpool and Man City. Very exciting. Chelsea with a bizarre, very bizarre home result to Brentford. Who thought their month could have got stranger? Also, West Ham Everton, big news for Everton. We'll be talking about that. Man United and Leicester City. This is, probably not that much of a surprise, to be honest, but we'll come around there. Tottenham hammering Newcastle, maybe a bit lower down the bill than it should be, but Seb said it was boring. And of course, there was the Derby d'Italia that we'll talk about as well. And I believe Seb's going to chime in with a little bit from Barcelona-Sevilla, a very important game for the La Liga season. So there's lots to cover today. And if you like coverage, that's the most straight one ever, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you like coverage, you should visit theathletic.com/TIFO, theathletic.com/TIFO, where you'll find some of the best coverage of football in the world. That's right. And at the moment, you can get a 30-day free trial to check it out for free for 30 days.
The coverage of the World Cup draw was very, very excellent before the weekend.
Yes, it was.
Really was.
I liked it.
Me too.
I got very... Oh, we didn't even put the World Cup draw in. Christ, we should talk about that as well. Fine, that's at the end. So stick around to the end and we'll talk about the World Cup draw. How exciting. Well, I will leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of all of the football that's happened. Yes, Liverpool 2, 0 Watford, Burnley 0 2 Manchester City. Would you believe it, JJ, I know you would, because you've been banging this drum for a while now. There's only 1 point in it. I think at some point, you know, a few months ago, Man City were 14 points ahead or something like that. Don't quote me on that, something like that. And now, of course, Liverpool head to the Etihad on the coming Sunday for the big face-off, all capital letters. It's a huge, huge, important game for the title. A title race that I wasn't certain was going to be happening 8 weeks ago.
Well, this is what happens when you draw a couple of games and the other team wins. It closes that gap that you had. It wasn't. Yeah. I think it was because 14 doesn't really matter what the gap was.
It was large enough.
Yeah. It was large enough that you...
They've lost one game, right? And now it's back.
Well, these are two of the best Premier League teams that I have ever seen.
Sure.
They just are, right? I mean, they're both... Man City got the record points total of 100 or something, and then Liverpool were 1 point off it when they didn't win the league behind them.
Yeah.
Basically, both teams are amazing. And there's a jump between the top two and the rest of the league at the moment. Mm. No one's can really close it down. I thought Chelsea would do better this season after the Champions League win, seemed to be going places, but the players they signed, like Lukaku, hasn't really worked. That would have been the thing that pushed them into that top three.
Yeah.
But that's what they're missed out on. I mean, it just takes one of them to slip up. And it's always against a silly team like Man City playing against Crystal Palace or something like that. Yeah. It's the kind of thing where they always make an error and then Liverpool don't, and they just build this momentum coming through.
It's a bit different to previous years, isn't it? Like you say, it feels like all they have to do is drop 2 points.
You look and then so suddenly, angry with your arms crossed.
Well, I'm making a very serious point with my arms crossed. I think it felt like in previous years there was more, maybe this is wrong, but there was more of an opportunity, Seb, for a slip up. Whereas now it feels like if you make any mistake at all, you know, they're breathing down your neck.
Yeah, I think so. It feels like that now. I mean, this is still a season when, amazingly, Man City lost home and away to Tottenham.
Sure.
It feels very weird, given how good they've been.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I think that's a trend over the last couple of years, because if you look at fan reactions now, it used to be the case where, you know, you'd lose, have a bit of a meltdown. Now, if a team draws away from home, that's a little bit of a crisis.
Sure.
Which is kind of indicative of how much jeopardy there now is, fixture to fixture in the Premier League. You love a bit of jeopardy.
Yeah.
Do you know, just like throwing in a narrative, it doesn't need to be there, but it reminds me of these like great individual sportsmen or teams where they need like a direct rival to be able to be better. Yeah, like the Ronaldo Messi thing, right?
Absolutely.
Or Senna and Prost, whatever. Like that sort of stuff where you have someone who drives you on. So Man City and Liverpool both make each other better.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what we're seeing.
So I was watching the Liverpool game, and I don't really remember anything about the goals or any of the kind of context in which the game occurred, but there was a pass in this game from Thiago, which is just ridiculous. Kind of involuntary noise watching on home on TV.
Mm.
He received the ball, it's in the first half, received the ball I think around halfway, and just slid probably 30-yard, 35-yard ball in towards the penalty box like a knife. Ridiculous bit of technique. Go and find that if it's not on the highlight reel. If it didn't lead to anything, so it might not be. But it's one of the best passes I've seen all season. Just such good technique.
Is that where he looks the opposite way when he's doing it?
Exactly.
As well.
It's like a no look reverse, take seven different opposition players out of the play with one touch pass. It's outrageous.
A hot butter Watford pass.
Sure is.
Very
catchy,
exciting.
Catchy name.
Hot butter Watford.
Yeah.
Good name for a band.
Melting. Yeah. Fine. Well, anyway, it's a huge game coming up on Sunday. I think we'll probably do some coverage of it on Monday.
You know, what's interesting about those kind of games? Like, every now and again, the Premier League throws up a sort of a bit of a face-off. And I remember 10, 15 years
every
ago.
Every weekend, 10 times.
No, but like, you know, what used to be termed like a Grand Slam Sunday.
And if
you go back 15 years, you would be fairly safe in assuming those games are going to be absolutely unwatchable. Awful, like 1-0. Remember the old sort of the Chelsea Liverpool games, the Mourinho Benitez games, which were just awful for
everybody. Is the word.
Exactly that. Yeah. Stale, chess match, no opportunities.
Man United Arsenal in the last 4 years has been a version of that.
Yeah, whereas Man United, it's almost like an inversion because Man United Arsenal always used to be punching, spiteful and nasty, going all the way back to the early 90s, actually.
If there wasn't blood, there was 10 goals.
Exactly that. Yeah. So interesting. I'm actually looking forward to a big game because I think it'll be good.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Good, exciting. Mm. Fine. We'll be covering that.
Yes.
Chelsea won 4 Brentford.
Yeah.
Yes. This is a weird one. I didn't watch this game, Seb. Bit of an anomaly, would you say? Or I mean, what's happened? What's happening with Chelsea?
I don't know what's happening with Chelsea, but I don't think I've ever seen N'Golo Kante chase the play as much as he did in this game.
Really?
So Chelsea played in a back four to start with, and it was very chaotic between
the two. They played in the back guards. Four?
Yeah, with Thiago and
Have
Rudiger.
They been doing that at all recently? Or is this
a bit
kind
of the...
Done it a couple of times over the few months, yeah.
Mm.
I would expect to see a back three against Real Madrid this week. But it was odd because going to this game, most people thought, right, well, Brentford are going to probably exist mainly on the counter-attack. Yeah. They did, and Mbeumo was very, very good, and Eriksen was excellent, all those kind of things. But the balance in Chelsea's midfield was wrong, I think. So Mount, Loftus-Cheek, Kante didn't really work. There was something askew there, and Brentford were absolutely ruthless. Mm. And it's one of my favourite bits of football all season was the Brentford third goal. Right. It has a little third-man run by Janelt and a perfect Ivan Toney pass through the kind of a slide rule pass, puts Janelt through on goal, and he sort of chips over Edouard Mendy. I always think that, whether I'm right or not, I always think whenever you see a well-executed third-man run, you think that's a well-coached team. Because it makes me think of Guardiola's Barcelona back in the day. But it's just a really, really good performance. And also features Christian Eriksen's first goal for Brentford.
There we go.
I think Mendy should have saved that
goal. Yeah, it's a weird one, wasn't
it? He's been off recently, by the way.
Hasn't been the same since he got back from AFCON.
Yeah,
really.
It's weird. He's suddenly something. I think it was even just before AFCON. I think maybe. He just, something changed where maybe something didn't go the way he thought it would. It's like his confidence has been dented or something.
It's purely subjective.
Like, I can't tell this for sure.
It was that cross shot West Ham goal by Masuaka, I think, at the City of London. And he just kind of misjudged it and it went in at his near post.
I think so much goalkeeping must be just pure confidence and acting on instinct.
Like
and the
memories.
Moment you double guess, you sort of second guess what you're thinking, it makes you not as, you just have to have blind faith in everything you're doing.
Mm.
And maybe he's just the kind of guy who overthinks things and that's why he's doubting little bits and pieces.
It's strange. It's also slightly ironic because his performance at Brentford for Chelsea was one of the best goalkeeping performances of the season. Do you remember when they just chucked everything? Adam, long balls, direct. It's straight into the box. Everything kind of just shelling the penalty box for a good hour. And he stood up to everything. It was physical and reliable and just excellent goalkeeping. And there is something a little bit wrong. He should probably save the third goal too. He might be a little bit quicker off his line for the Eriksen goal. Really well taken goal. Nice left-footed chip, kind of finish high into the roof of the net.
It's kind of hard to save that one though, isn't it? Eriksen on his own.
No, but it's hard to save that. But he should, like, the opportunity for Eriksen, because you know where the ball's going in that minute. Mm. Like, you know when it's coming across the penalty box, you can probably anticipate. And it's just split seconds, isn't it? It's what you're saying. It's kind of, you lose a little bit of self-belief and that's how it shows.
Ivan Toney.
Yeah.
Quick word on Ivan Toney because, you know, based on the form of some England strikers this season, is there at all an outside shout here for a national team call-up?
I think it should happen, but I don't think it will because Tony's different. Like, I don't necessarily think he's an international caliber goal scorer.
Sure.
But as a centre forward, he'll be very difficult to play against because he's physical and a direct threat. But he's also got this wonderful kind of velvet touch. He'll drop off the forward line a little bit in a way which is not hugely dissimilar to someone like Harry Kane. Sometimes they're not the same player, I understand. But if you look at the other options England have, if something were to go wrong at the World Cup, so Calvert-Lewin, not really back to where he was under Ancelotti.
No.
Rashford, no. Who is your other centre forward? Vardy retired.
Sure.
Danny Ings, maybe, but hasn't had the greatest season for Villa.
No.
Ollie Watkins, good player.
Ollie Watkins, you know, started the other day, of course, in the friendly.
He did, and he scored at the weekend, I think. But then you think, don't know, because if Harry Kane was to get injured and England were to start Ollie Watkins,
a big noise.
It was a big noise offset, which was very frightening.
Sure.
Quite frightening, not very frightening.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Perhaps that's how the England strikers feel with the performances of Ivan Toney.
I think he's a kind of slightly
big noise
beat
offset
of football player. And I don't know, if you were to face Ivan Toney as someone that hasn't come up against him before, I think you'd struggle a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why not? But I don't think it'll happen.
Sure. Okay. Well, one can dream.
Yeah.
Rudiger taking a shot from about 35 yards is amazing, by the way.
Did he score that?
Yes, it flew into
the
top corner.
Was that the one Chelsea goal?
Yeah.
Oh, it was scored from 35 yards.
Yeah, he absolutely launches it. The technique as well, it doesn't hook it, but he puts his foot right through it and it carries into the top left corner. It's really like just great technique on the shot.
Yeah.
I think it was a match of the day stat they put up, which is Chelsea's longest range goal since 2007.
Wow.
They just don't shoot. Like across, I did this article for Telegraph newspaper there. It was about how teams shoot from distance far less than they ever did. It's the same sort of thing you get. Like in basketball, teams tend to shoot in the same sort of area now, and I think it's changed so they always look for three-pointers now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that everything's three-pointers. Yeah,
yeah,
that's the meta. And the same in football is when you analyse it, you see the most valuable parts, like XG, is to get the ball into that six-yard area or the width of the goal, basically, width of the six-yard box in the middle of the pitch. So that's why everyone tries to work it there. There's a bit of Graham Potter was quoted this week saying all the fans at Brighton are urging the players to shoot, and it's confusing the players whose orders are to not shoot.
Yeah, yeah.
But you want to see a ball get pinged in 30 yards off of centre-back. You want to see that.
I would also say, as a supporter in a football stadium, I would rather see a shot sort of saved or hit the crossbar or just miss the post, you know, from 25 yards than I would see 100%. The play develop for another 100%. 90 seconds and nothing happen. I get that. I understand why teams will do that. As you said, it's about the probability of scoring from certain areas.
And control of the match, yeah. So you do that, you sort of...
I enjoy it. I mean, when I went
you'd
to...
You'd like Scottish football in that case, you should watch
sure,
that.
Sure, maybe I should check it out. Yeah. I went to Wembley the other day to watch the England-Ivory Coast game.
Did you get hit by a paper aeroplane?
No, but I was obsessed with a number of paper aeroplanes.
You really, really upset you that?
I really think it's...
Yeah, you didn't like that.
I'm not, you know...
Did you feel, because you're a bigger person, did you feel...
exposed?
Yeah.
My head?
Yeah.
No, I was luckily I was sort of in a good area where there weren't many falling aeroplanes.
Okay.
But there were, I don't, if people don't know what we're talking about, there
most were most areas without falling
literally
aeroplanes
hundreds hundreds and hundreds of paper aeroplanes at this game. And I think I remember this video that went viral about 5 years ago. I don't know if it was a thing before or not, but it's almost a minute long, and it's a plane that from the very top corner of a stadium sort of takes ages and glides down and then finally hits a player in the head and everyone cheers. Like the whole corner of the stadium is captivated by this plane instead of by the football. And I don't know if that was something that inspired this to start or if it was already a big thing, but I've never seen so many paper aeroplanes in my life. Honestly, people must have been bringing in reams of paper to do this because how could you... It's all children as well. One other quick thing on this game, right? Don't want to... I never watched England play live before, right? In a friendly, particularly. Obviously, Harry Maguire got booed, right?
Yeah.
I heard the boo.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a bad person, but when I looked around, the people I saw booing weren't real people.
What were they?
They were children.
Don't count.
Or they were just not real people for whatever reason. You know, they were just like people who I thought if they booed me, I'd think, well, yeah, you just look like a booer. You know, you look like someone who's going to boo. And then to see it sort of like taken seriously, I think how many people...
It became a thing for a good 3 days.
Yeah, but seriously, people have to do something? It's the same as like news reports, like writing news
Social media
off the back of social media.
Exactly.
But like, these people, they're not... I mean, obviously, they're real people. I understand children are real people, right? But they were children. The people throwing the paper aeroplanes at the people booing were teenagers in big gangs who, I don't know, were having fun. Great, that's fine. But are we honestly really going to, like, listen, if a big gang of teenagers sort of started to say, oh, you know, don't drink water anymore, are we not going to drink water? Because why would we take it seriously?
Well, it'll get picked up by certain, like, red-top papers who would run it as a story, like...
Yeah, but then it becomes a thing.
Exactly.
Like, the players respond to it. That Harry Maguire was booed is suddenly a big thing. Children are making noises with their mouths.
That's how it works. This is how the news cycle of everything works.
It is kind
crazy.
Of amazing, though, that within hours of that game finishing, most of the England team that started that game were putting out their own posts on social addressing the booing by the non-people.
Right, by the non-people.
Yeah,
the children.
Yeah.
We don't let them vote. Why would we let them boo? They don't know. They haven't worked it out yet. They haven't got old enough.
See, like... I spoke to you the morning after this happened, and you were semi-annoyed about it. If anything, over the last week, you've got more irritated by it.
Well,
more
it's
angry
the aging
than you
process,
were.
Isn't it? I'm, you know, what,
I mean, five
nine days.
Days
older than I was when we had this conversation.
I think I remember exactly when I worked out that this is how you just shouldn't pay any attention to any of these sorts of people on Twitter or anything. Yeah. Was when I was at the camp now, I was on holiday, and I was doing the tour for like the third time. I don't know why I keep going there. It's so cool when you go up to the pitch.
You've been on the tour three times.
Yeah.
That is weird.
I really
twice,
like
maybe
it.
Maybe if you're taking someone who you think would like it, but three times.
I really like it.
Did you go by yourself?
No. And then anyway, so then I doesn't matter.
His imaginary friend, Johan Cruyff.
So then I went to there, and in the museum bit of it, there's this like interactive thing we can do, like a quiz. Right. And one of the questions that came up.
You play it every time?
No, it's the one time. Anyway, I'll get through this, right? This quiz comes up, and one of the questions was, what was Jose Mourinho's job when Bobby Robson was manager? And the answer was a translator. That's what he was. Yeah. But the answer they had down was assistant manager. Oh. That's the only answer that was viable. And I was looking, because that's going to be wrong. I don't know why I had to get this right on an interactive game designed for children.
Well,
and then some dick of a teenager was like on my shoulder, going like, he's pushed the button and went, assistant manager, like that. I was like, I hate you.
Yeah. How long ago
I hate you.
They have to grow up, right? It's not fair to hate them, but I do.
Yeah, well, it's fine.
Hey, so at Molyneux, they've got a really good museum, if you ever have time to go to it. But within it, alongside all the kind of the trinkets and the sort of memorabilia.
What qualifies for having time to go to the Molyneux?
Well, no, I was there for a game.
What does that mean? I live in London, I've got like a day. How much time
I was
do
there,
I need?
I was there to cover a match there.
Sure.
And I was just there to cover a match.
You were there to
there
cover
again.
A match there, yeah.
And I had a couple of hours before kickoff, and I thought, I will go and look at the museum.
Yeah.
In the museum, they've got a penalty simulator, right, which allows you to take penalties against old Wolves goalkeepers of the past.
Who are actually there. Yeah, so
they just knock about.
Yeah, that's their job, salaried.
£4 and
21k a year.
Go and use the penalty simulator. It's great fun. I was there by myself.
Did you score?
It was like a Wednesday. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
I scored against Wayne Hennessy and Mike Stowell.
It can't be that good a simulator then, can it?
Good player.
I've seen you kick a ball.
I've seen you. Yeah.
Well, anyway, children aren't real. But let's. What were we talking about before?
I don't know, we've been quite self-indulgent again.
West Ham and Everton.
Let's have a break before we do that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Yes, West Ham 2-1 Everton.
Yeah.
Everton are in trouble. Everton play Burnley at Turf Moor on Wednesday, which is now a huge game. Because Everton could legitimately be relegated at this point. I think we talked about their run-in a couple of weeks ago. Or maybe
horrifying.
It's a very, very bad. In fact, JJ, do you want to just, while we're chatting, get the run-in up there for their fixtures for the rest of the Premier League season? It's very tough, which is probably one of the main reasons why they're relegation candidates.
And there was only one game on it where I felt even semi-confident that they might win.
Well, I think that might be Burnley.
No, it wasn't Burnley.
There was one more after Burnley.
Well, the game's coming up. They've got Burnley, like you just said, on Wednesday night, and they're away. Then they've got Man United at home, which would be pretty easy. Yeah. And Crystal Palace is postponed for some reason. Don't know why that is. Leicester, Liverpool, good luck there.
Palace is still in the FA Cup.
Palace is playing the FA Cup semi-final.
Oh, right, okay. Well, Liverpool, Everton, I mean, maybe this kind of game they raise, but it's at Anfield, so they won't win that. Then they've got Chelsea at home, they won't win that. Leicester, Brentford maybe, Arsenal, final day of the season, could be a big game, Arsenal-Everton. Yeah.
That's real.
Because Arsenal will be pushing
really
for Champions
run.
League.
Can you imagine having to go to Everton, having to go to Arsenal away to survive?
Yeah, on the last day of the season.
That's horrible.
This could be the case. So anyway, it's tough times for Everton. We did release a video the other day based on an Athletic article about, you know, what would be the cost of an Everton relegation? Quite serious.
The answer was a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a result of their current financial situation, right?
Yeah. So one of the things there is all the obvious bits about players being devalued, depreciating. So being unable to shift players, high wage earners.
Can I just say one of the interesting things about it along these lines that I learned was that, you know, unlike clubs that expect relegation from the Premier League, who probably insert relegation release clauses in their players' contracts, Everton will not very likely have that in many cases. And therefore the players, also at least wage reduction clauses, I should say. So you have a striker who costs you 10 grand a week in the Premier League. Yeah. You put a clause in to reduce that to £3,000 a week if you get relegated. They will not have that with their players, and the cost of wages for that team is very, very high. They're going
to
struggle in a
championship. They may also have relegation release clauses in place, so sure. players like Richarlison might be suddenly worth 35 million rather than the 70 he's worth or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I think also their kit sponsor agreement with Cazoo is coming to an end this season.
Yep.
And there's a bit in that video about, I think the value of kit sponsorship drops by about 80%.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Although also, it sounds like sponsors are probably going to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, a few other issues there as well.
Like no sponsor in their right mind is currently going to enter into a deal based on them being in the Premier League when they may well not be.
No, because you're not going to pay Premier League prices for Football League visibility. So very, very sketchy time for Everton.
They have a weak team just now as well. So injury list is pretty nuts. Tom Davies, Yerry Mina, Andros Townsend, he's properly out. He's got an ACL injury. Fabian Delph. Just says unknown. His injury is early April. He's out till Donny van de Beek doing really well there. He's injured now. Yeah. And then Nathan Patterson's at Rangers, but he doesn't really play. So they got those. But you look at the first 11 they put out, and it just sounds weak. So that, like, Jonjo Kenny's playing at right back. He wasn't very good when he was at Celtic.
Awobi in central midfield was very strange.
Awobi, and it's his touch. It lets it go.
That's
he's
one of the worst goals I've seen conceded all season. That second West Ham goal. It's Jared Bono ends up scoring it, but it's the... It's the touch from Iwobi.
It's a lack of awareness of the situation.
The one when Antonio's just onside.
Yeah, because it's one bad touch from Iwobi. Nobody in Everton shirt reacts to it. And all that has to happen is a straight pass up the pitch and Antonio's thrown goal. Should probably score with his first chance, but then Bowen's there.
That's because Keane steps out. So the fullbacks are wide. So there's a massive gap in the middle because Godfrey's, I think he's the only one left on his own. And Michael Keane strides into midfield, and that's
so he takes the ball.
He carries and leaves the gap.
Midfield, yeah. And you think, okay, that's nice, progressive centre-back play. Okay, but then a good team builds in a little bit of a protection. Somebody else sees where he's going, drops into the space. For Everton, there's just chasm.
I think the rest of Everton team would be higher up the pitch. So normally when you carry it like that, it's because you need to just then get someone into the midfield to try and have a bit of ownership there. But the players are all quite bunched together, which is the weird thing. So then when he goes and leaves that gap, West Ham are just ready to break into the hole that he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
They've been a team, the front, like Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison are great players, but there's so much medium. And I think of the amount of money they've spent over the last while and to put out the team that they put out. And Mason Holgate's playing defensive midfield because Alan was suspended. Yeah, so
They've spent a lot of money.
There's a lot of change managers. I mean, Benitez basically set this team up to be relegation avoiders.
Sure.
When maybe that wasn't the right thing to do, but they must have spent all their money already. So
I find Everton's game management, situation management is weird because that happens just after they've equalised. They're back in the game and you probably take a draw at West Ham. That's a good result for Frank Lampard. And yet you open yourselves up to a situation where, okay, you're facing Antonio, Jared Bowen, right? So these are good counter-attacking players, they're good direct, pacey players who like to play on the break. And this happened before. I remember watching them at Spurs, and in the first half, they played a ludicrously high line against Son Heung-min and Harry Kane.
Here's the question based on that, right? Yeah. Frank Lampard, extremely successful player, played for an extraordinarily successful team,
yes.
Right? A team that would always push for the goal if needed because of the context. Is there a precedent, would you say, for managers, coaches who come from teams like that, who try to instill the same value at teams where the context is not the same? I'm not saying, you know, like that sounds like a very stupid thing when you say, I appreciate Frank Lampard knows the position that Everton are in better than the three of us do here. However, you know, it's difficult to unearth things like that that have been drilled into you over such a long time. His entire experience of playing football professionally was based on go and get the goal if you need it.
Yeah.
And him as a player being the player that went to get the goal when it was needed, right? It's kind of interesting. You drop him into a situation where actually you're right. Like Everton, if they take a draw at West Ham, that's not a bad result given their position in the league table.
Yeah.
And yet Frank Lampard is there maybe saying, come on, let's try and snatch this.
I wonder also whether, like, Frank Lampard spent a lot of his career playing in front of some of the best defences in Premier League history.
Sure.
And so his idea of what a midfield construction should look like and how a team should attack is probably based on that. But I'd be surprised if it just seems such a stupid mistake.
Mm.
To make it, I don't know. I'm not sure
if it's just a mindset that's difficult to escape from.
I wonder if he has that much control over the team at all. Like it just seems, it seems in that it, to
we
be
don't
in that,
know.
No, but it's not. That's not necessarily a reflection of him. It's just that he hasn't been there long enough for the team to reflect his belief system, his personality, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this kind of moment of chaos. Unfortunately, moment of chaos coincides with a very, very real relegation threat.
Sure.
Which is not ideal.
But no. Then, you know. It's also one of those situations, and forgive me for speaking for football fans, but when a big team nears relegation,
we talked about this,
there is something about it where people start to go,
ooh, that'd be interesting.
That could be quite funny. That could be interesting. I wonder what, and to be, you know, there's a cruel part of me that would, I thought the other day, if Everton were relegated, they'll be on telly all the time, right? Because there's, you know, they'll have Friday night games every week.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I'd watch them. I think I'd watch Everton in the Championship just to see how much they likely dominate the league. But there's something strange about that, isn't there? Because I imagine, I don't know how well shielded the Everton players are from, you know, from the general public, but I feel like the general public, the troll, the imp of the perverse in the general public does kind of want them to go down.
I think this has always been the way. Like, I think...
it's not specific to them.
No, it's not about Everton. It's just that there's a novelty in seeing a very big club in the Football League. So it was the same with Villa. It wasn't quite the same with Newcastle because that was a little bit of a different situation.
Have Everton ever been out of the top flight?
Only
never.
Everton and Arsenal have never been relegated.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. The ones who could challenge them for it, like Watford below them. Burnley have the same number of games Everton have played, so they're both in 28. But Burnley are 4 points below, and their team's really weak, but they're very well organised. And at that sort of stage
and
of the season,
specialists at escaping relegation.
Yeah, and they play for set pieces, and they'll get some scrappy 1-0s, 0-0s out of that, and they might be okay.
Watford look at their running.
Looks really like well organised against Liverpool, and we're working hard, and that might be the kind of thing where they can scrap enough to get. So I don't think they've got the players for it. But.
So here's Burnley's fixture list upcoming. I mean, there's an argument to say it's significantly easier. There are teams that might be scrapping as well. Obviously, they play Everton. They are away to Norwich. They are away to West Ham. They're at home to Southampton. They're at home to Wolves. They're away to Watford. They're at home to Aston Villa. They're away to Tottenham on the penultimate game. And then they're at home to Newcastle on the final game of the season, right?
That's Burnley.
That's Burnley.
Right.
That is easier than Everton's run-in, like significantly, significantly easier. Like half of these teams are safe from relegation, mid-table, maybe nothing to fight for. You know, Southampton, was it Southampton Wolves this weekend? It was 1-1, you know?
Southampton Leeds, 1-1.
Southampton Leeds, I mean, Tottenham, of course, the penultimate game of the season for Burnley, they'll still be pushing for top four, you would have thought, by then. Newcastle, I imagine, will be safe by that point. I mean, there's a lot of games in there that you can see Burnley getting points from.
I also think the situation for Everton is a lot tougher just generally because you've got a lot of high-reputation players there.
Yeah.
I know some of them have come on big transfers and wages and aren't great decisions, but they are household names in the way that Burnley's players aren't.
Sure.
And also, I think if you're someone like Richarlison or Dominic Cavalier and Jordan Pickford, maybe.
Richarlison.
Like a dinosaur.
That's what I thought you said.
That would have been an excellent nickname.
Richarlison.
West Country Richarlison. I think it is only natural that suddenly, you know, you get to April, May, relegation looks likely. Agents start talking to you and saying, yeah, do you want to be there?
Richarlison. I've got T-Rex arms.
I think it was like a Pokemon now.
It's difficult.
Like Charmander.
Go! Richarlison. wild Richarlison has appeared. Anyway, that's Richarlison and Everton a bit screwed, aren't they? Well, we'll see. It'll be interesting to cover.
There's a note here which just says Mason Holgate sock holes.
Well, Mason Holgate sock holes. I was very interested by this. Yeah. Mason Holgate sock. We've lost JJ to the powers of chaos. Mason Holgate sock holes. I bring this up purely because watching the game and then, a medicine man runs on with
a health person,
a Brazilian health person runs on with some scissors and just starts sort of chopping away in socks. So you've got kind of like a polka dot sock skin thing happening afterwards, you know, kind of cool. And I didn't understand, so I tweeted it. Many contradictory answers came back to me. Lots of people saying it's for circulation, which didn't really make that much sense to me. And then other people saying, well, that doesn't make sense either because pressure socks are there to increase circulation. Ooh. So if you cut holes in them, then you are decreasing circulation. I don't know what this is about.
I know the answer.
Kyle Walker used to do it.
Do you know the answer?
It's speed holes. It makes them run faster.
Speed holes. Okay. All right, Seb, this is the first ever, you know, live commission.
Mm.
But I commission you to find out and make a TIFO video about it because I think a TIFO video about holy socks, very interesting.
What is the title of this video, do we think?
We'll work it out later. Don't let them see the whole process
because
they'll be horrified by how cynical it is.
I am on it.
Well, let's have another break and then we'll be back.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yes, Manchester United won. Won Leicester. Man United were quite poor in this game, Seb, weren't they? A little bit fortunate to get the result that they did.
Yeah, I was fine with the second Leicester goal being disallowed, but I thought that McTominay should have probably been sent off that tackle on Maddison. It's extraordinary that he wasn't. It's
sure.
Terrible tackle. Clumsy and disjointed. Nothing seemed to work properly. Fred played very well, I thought.
Yep.
He was pretty good, but
again,
he was being asked to do a lot more than he should have been.
Sure.
He was the entire midfield at times.
It's funny though, isn't it? You move him like 5 metres further up the pitch and all of a sudden he's a world beater.
Well, he's contributing everywhere and obviously deservedly scored the equaliser. But the false nine didn't work with Bruno Fernandes. He had a couple of nice moments, but he's not built to play that position, really.
No.
Seemed a bit strange.
Just signed a new contract
as well. Just signed a very, very lucrative new contract. Hey, but...
Is it an additional year and then a new contract?
I think so, yeah.
Sure.
Also, Leicester were very good.
Yeah.
I really like Leicester. I thought that had they had a little bit more of a direct threat at the top of the pitch to go with Kelechi Iheanacho, they'd have probably won the game. But Dewsbury Hall, Barnes, Maddison, that all worked really nicely behind him. And given they were without Wilfred Ndidi, I thought they were excellent in midfield.
Yeah.
And Parlos Mendy.
Where's Vardy? Is he injured?
I guess so. He did not play. Yeah. But obviously Ndidi's gone for the season too.
Yeah.
And Daka came on at the end, but right at the end. Which was strange to me because I felt like, put Daka's pace up against Maguire and Varane and he might have had...
Let the children boo.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
the non-people boo. But... United were, God, it's a mess.
Cool.
It is a mess. Like, it just doesn't, it's kind of sad watching Jadon Sancho at the moment. I thought he looked really lost. Alanga, I like Alanga. I think he's a good player, but it didn't play well. Pogba kind of just strolled around and had some nice touches, but.
Replaced by Matic at about 80 minutes.
Yeah, that's like an anti-CV moment.
Sure.
It was not great. Matic played all right, actually.
Yeah.
With Stretchy when he came on, yeah.
It's funny, Matic has been okay in recent games.
Yeah. I can see Fernandes being a problem for United in the next few years.
Sure.
I think when you pay... So he's now paid third best at the club. So it's behind De Gea and Ronaldo, right?
Yeah, at the moment.
So his best seasons for United was when he was... The first thing is I don't think he's one of the best players in the world.
No.
I think he's outside the top 15, 20.
He's a very good player. He's just not outstanding.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So he's not the absolute top tier, which is when you should be paying the top tier wages for that sort of player. When he was best is when everything else was organized around him being the loose cannon. So he was able to do whatever he wants to do. So when he's there and on form, they play and often they win because he would score or assist or drive the team.
Drag them to points.
Exactly. But what you need is the whole team as a unit to sort of work. And I never see him being that good or functional within a team that is...
Within any system.
I don't think he would work. I mean, I may be totally wrong and people think I'm wrong here, but he wouldn't get in the Liverpool team. I don't know where you'd play him. Maybe as a false nine, possibly.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't work in the same way that like Firmino or Jota does.
Well, let me put it this way to you then, right? It seems at the moment like the two most likely candidates for the United job are Pochettino or Ten Hag.
Mm.
Does he fit in either of those sorts of... I mean, with Pochettino, there's an argument to say that maybe he does. Pochettino often
Ten Hag
has
played
recognised 10.
He plays a 4-3-3, but he often looks like a 4-2-3-1. So he could play as a 10 in there. But again, it's very... Ten Hag, like the managers he's often compared to, like Guardiola and stuff, very highly structured.
Sure.
There's not a lot of free-flowingness. There's not a lot of room for improvisation other than in the absolute final third.
Mm.
And I agree with what Rangnick's saying in his post-match, saying that they need more aggression, more physicality. They're missing this sort of dynamism. I think when you saw it in the Champions League with maybe, was it Real or Barca? Was it Barca get torn apart by Bayern or something like that? And you can see the difference between the two in that game. It was that Bayern were like powerful and had momentum and energy and just that. This is bigger, just bigger lads all over the pitch. And United, I think, are missing that. They don't really have the dynamism. Players like Pogba... who is it that... No, I'm thinking of a different game, actually. There's certain players in that team that just don't go into challenges. McTominay does, but he gets away with a lot of that sort of stuff. But they're missing... It's not just about like going and fouling people. It's about being kind of hard.
They're missing Luke Shaw.
Competitive.
I know, I don't want to put their poor performances all down to Luke Shaw being injured, but Alex Sellers is just not the same player. Luke Shaw is that is one of the driving forces.
We came up at half-time here, didn't he? Because he's something wrong with his... least it's to do with his old injury with his leg.
So just with what JJ is saying about kind of presence and physicality, I watched Barcelona on Sunday night, and Araujo, the centre half, like he would tackle and take the ball, but with a kind of this dismissive physicality. That's what United don't have, this kind of...
A ferocity.
Yeah, really, because it's there's an added value to tackling like that, to being a good technical tackler, but also having that sort of, how dare you try and dribble past me, or how dare you compete for the ball with me. And United have that nowhere, really.
Sure. Nice bit of steel.
They need players who are dicks.
Yeah.
Sure. Like, you need the players who are really not, like the ones that you don't want to play against, but you like having in your team. That's sort of like Roy Keane.
I mean, Fernandes is kind of like that.
Yeah.
I think Fernandes is just a bit... I think he crosses the line, but he's a bit moany in a way that isn't necessarily helpful, because it's kind of, you hear some of the things he says. He was quoted over the weekend about saying, oh, United's level has to rise. Like, yours too, mate. Sure. I mean, you were quite good a couple of years ago, and the year before that, you were brilliant for long periods. But someone on Twitter, I think Tim Stillman at Stilberto, said he's kind of a set piece player in a way at times, in the way that he wasn't under Solskjaer, when he was kind of a missing piece, like a little sign outs between the different Man United departments. Now he's, you don't notice him very often, apart from when he's complaining about whatever. I don't know, I wouldn't necessarily have given him a new contract. I thought it was kind of...
We don't lose him for free, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you keep him or you don't, and you have to pay the money, and United can afford it, so therefore his value is probably worth what they're paying him. But he should be the tier below the absolute top. Again, like Varane would be the sort of players you build around. And if you're talking about the missing ferocity, then Varane next to someone who is more aggressive, like what he was next to Ramos, who is aggressive. That's what you get. You don't get that from Harry Maguire. You notice that Rangnick switched to centre-backs as well, playing Harry Maguire on the right.
Why did he do that, I think?
I think it's he said it's because he saw him do it, or saw him play for England and thought he'd be better in that position. Yeah. It just changed the angle of where you can pass it.
It is his natural position, the centre-back right spot. I mean, like, that's where
always
he played.
Always plays on the left, though.
No, this is the thing. Like, that's where he played.
For Maguire?
For Maguire. That's where he played at Leicester. It's apparently his natural position. He's played on the left at United because previously it's felt that the other centre-backs haven't had the
quality. I thought I read in Cox's piece this morning that he's mostly on the...
I mean, he is mostly. I mean, he has literally only played on the left for ages now. But I think it's more to do with him being seen as the better of a partnership, and therefore, given that neither player is as comfortable on the left as the right, with Maguire there, it makes complete sense.
Then Varane looked a bit out of sorts playing on the left because he's always on the right.
It's a little bit of a kind of a proper football mannerism. But when Paul Pogba said a couple of weeks ago, "Oh, our season's dead," I thought, that's kind of a weird thing to say, because I know United are a little bit behind in the race for top four, but it's 3 points, isn't it? It's not
3 points and two games.
Yeah, it is. No, I don't think so, because you're fighting with Arsenal, who've got a really difficult run in, Spurs, who you can't really depend upon, and United have the players whereby they don't have to play well to win games. If you get Ronaldo back fit, you're probably going to get another 7 or 8 goals.
Let's look at it now.
It's kind of a weird thing, because Champions League qualification for United is super important, and yet it's been... Oh, we're not going to win the Champions League or the Premier League, so therefore our season is over.
I think the expectation is that Arsenal, on current form, probably win those two games in hand, right? At which point the gap is 9.
Yeah, it is. But then stranger things have happened, and this is a young Arsenal team.
The gap is 6. I'm sorry.
Well, but it's a young Arsenal team who have no experience of this situation.
Yes.
And on current form, absolutely, they should walk it. But if you're Man United and you got to play Arsenal.
Yeah. What about West Ham?
I think West Ham have got their attention on the Europa League.
Sure.
And rightly so. They've got they've had an excellent Europa League campaign. Just knocked out Sevilla, so fair enough.
Yeah. No. I'm curious to see Manchester United's fixture run in. Let's look at this. Everton comes at the weekend. That's funny. Norwich, that'll be fun. They've got Liverpool, and then they've got Arsenal.
This is Man United, is it?
Yeah.
You're right.
Then it's Brentford, Brighton, Chelsea, and Palace. So they're still to play Arsenal, Liverpool, and Chelsea.
But if you have a team that you're fighting with on your fixture list, that's kind of enough at this point to keep your season alive, and not kind of, oh, we're just waiting for the summer now. It's like, no, because Champions League qualification versus being in the Europa League or worse is two very different things for Man United.
Sure.
So it's just weird. It just, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but they just look like a team that are bored of the season.
No, I think I would agree with that.
It's dispiriting.
Let's have a quick look at Arsenal's run. And you said it was tough.
It's awkward.
I'm curious to hear it. Of course, there's Palace this evening.
Yeah, they're playing before we release. So
we don't know the result of that. They are at home to Brighton, away to Southampton, away to Chelsea, then at home to United. That's two tough fixes in a row. Then away to West Ham. That's tough. Home to Leeds, away to Newcastle, home to Everton. That's a little bit hard.
They've also got to go to Spurs On a rearranged fixture.
On a rearranged fixture.
That's at White Hart Lane, which is, we think at the moment, latest news from the Premier League is that is in the penultimate week of the season.
Oh,
so yeah, that
very
could be a
exciting.
Bit of a showdown.
That would be do you think they do that because they know it's going to be a big game?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I like that.
That'll be a TV game, won't it?
A TV game.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Speaking of Tottenham, 5-1 Newcastle. Nothing hugely interesting you've written here, Seb. I mean, that's quite interesting to me.
Well, it was a good performance. It was a strange...
I watched some of the first half.
First half's kind of boring.
Yes, it was.
It was very stale possession-y.
Also, Newcastle didn't seem like the second place team in that first half.
The second place?
You know, as in the team that was going to lose 5-1.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no. That was a weird way of phrasing that.
Was it? Did you understand what I was saying?
I knew what you meant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to side with Joe, but yeah.
Sometimes you have to.
Interesting points. Don and I, when we came to the office this morning, were talking about...
Producer Don.
Yeah. Rodrigo Bentancourt and him being excellent to watch. And it's amazing how much difference having lots of technical ability in that position makes. Mm. All of a sudden, you can play out from the back without that...
That position being central midfield.
Central midfield, anchor role there, really. Bentancourt happily receives the ball anywhere because he's good enough in possession to... He's press resistant, I guess. Great passer of the ball. All of a sudden, the terror of playing out from the back has gone, which is very interesting and very novel. Also, Dan Byrne had an absolute meltdown in this game. He had a brilliant first half an hour. Played very well. And he's been very good since he moved from Brighton. But then, I don't know what happened to him, was probably complicit in conceding Tottenham goal 2 and Tottenham goal 5. Started blowing kisses at Lucas Moura, started trying to wind up Tottenham players.
Blowing kisses?
Yeah, it's a very weird moment. Yeah, so basically, there was a moment where Tottenham were trying to break on a counter, and he sort of shoulder charged Emerson Royale to the ground. It wasn't such a bad tackle.
Sure.
But he was on a yellow card, and he probably could have had 2 or 3 in the second half. Don't know how he stayed on the pitch. But then he kind of lost himself a little bit and started jostling with Tottenham players. And yeah, positionally, we were saying, if you're 6'7", you don't get away with much in the kind of outer position sense because people spot you. You're 6'7".
You get away with other things.
Yeah, but he...
you don't get mugged.
Afternoon. You probably don't get mugged.
No one attacks you. People assume
you
things.
Are, you know, you're big.
Yeah.
But he had a pretty bad afternoon.
Okay.
But it was...
sorry to hear it.
3 points for Tottenham, which is good, but...
3 points and 5 goals. Great. Arsenal play Palace tonight, as we've said.
Hey, so interestingly, I badgered you into watching Juventus Inter Milan last night.
You really very much did. I wasn't
you were,
going to watch
At one
it.
Point you said, there's only a 60% chance that I'm going
to
watch it.
And it was, to be honest, it was lower than that when I told
and
you.
And you were lying.
Yeah, it was about 15.
That was your lying text on WhatsApp. Yeah,
sure.
But... What did you find?
I'm glad I watched it.
Well, you indeed. Yeah.
I'm glad I watched it. Of course, it was Juventus 0-1 Inter. Very interesting game. The Derby d'Italia, I've learned that it is called. Yeah? Big game for some reason. I don't know why. Here's a few things that I learned about the game. Are you both ready for me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Vlahovic, looks like a player who played for Bayern Munich in the 1980s. That's his look. Not such a funny comment, just a real observation. Yeah, you know, with the lovely hair, but I can see him in those baggy shirts.
Can you name another player that played for Bayern Munich in the 1980s?
No, but I know what they look like. I know what they look like. Miroslav Klose's dad. How about that? Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't alive. Tell you what, Rabiot had a really good half. Big takeaways from this game before I just list all the things I noticed. Juve were really good. I saw some people. I listened to James Horncastle on the broadcast saying
your friend James,
friends, saying this is maybe the best performance of Juventus that he's seen for all season. Right? They were unfortunate to lose the game. I think the penalty incident was absolutely bizarre. The only goal came from a penalty, and if you didn't watch it, I'll just recount it for you now. Very strange. Okay, here we go. It was a bit of a contentious decision anyway, the initial foul. It's the sort of one I think is now given in the VAR era. You wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't given. So obviously fans were very upset. It was Dumfries. He stood on a little bit. Penalty. Fine. Hakan Çalhanoğlu steps up, looked extremely nervous. You know, big stadium, scary fans. Szczesny makes a lovely save. Wasn't a very good penalty. And Çalhanoğlu goes for the follow-up, scores the goal, but the referee blows the whistle because there were about 7 players on top of it when it went in. And it looked like there must have been a foul.
On no, who? On a Juventus defender?
Yeah, on Szczesny. The referee blows as if Çalhanoğlu has fouled Szczesny. They go to VAR. There is no foul, right? So obviously it is just a goal, and why the referee blows the whistle, I have no idea, other than like big bundle of players.
It looks like a foul. Referees always do this.
Right. It looks like a foul.
It looks like it's going to be something.
It's maybe they think 80% chance I'll be right. I'll blow the whistle, whatever. Yeah. Go to VAR. There is no foul. So the goal should be given. However, what they notice is that what I didn't even, so many things happened, I didn't manage to get the name of the player, but a Juventus defender infringes on the 18-yard box when the penalty is taken, right? So instead of just giving the goal, because the referee's clearly blown the whistle for a foul he thinks is against Juventus, he uses that as the reason that he blew the whistle as a get out of jail free card to force them to take the penalty again, which they do, and Çalhanoğlu scores.
Did the player who was caught encroaching, did he have an influence on the players?
I think it was De Ligt. No. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, of course he probably did, because he will have been one of the first to arrive at the big kerfuffle. But the weird thing about it, I think, is if you've blown the whistle thinking Juve have been infringed. Have had a foul against them, and therefore the goal shouldn't stand, to then force the penalty to be taken again.
Yeah.
Very strange thing. If it's a punishment for Juve, then why don't you just let the goal stand, and the referee should just admit that he was wrong to blow the whistle. At least that's the implication I get. Incidentally, this all happened about 50 minutes into the first half, of which there was maybe 8 minutes added time. Just after the first 45, there were a few injuries, lots of yellow cards, it was a feisty, feisty game.
And so Matthias De Ligt was caught doing a bit of cheating in the second half. What did you make of that?
This was the very end of the...
When he collapsed.
Yeah. I can't remember who it was. Juve had been pushing very hard. I felt a bit bad for them. I honestly, they were probably the better team on the night. Worth saying, Inter Milan defended spectacularly well. And I think the commentators at the time said, this has the look of a Juve team of the past 10 years who's about to win the title, defending a scrappy game 1-0 win. That's what Inter appeared to
be. High praise.
Yeah. They appeared as champions. It was essentially the praise. De Ligt takes a little finger in the eye, you know, flops over. I mean, obviously he wouldn't have caused a grown adult person to fall over. But at 92 minutes in a game where you probably feel like you should have won, you might still be pissed off about a contentious penalty decision anyway. And on a different night, you know, it's a 50-50 game.
Okay.
I can understand trying to buy it a bit. I also think because he's a big centre-back, he's inevitably going to get
sillier.
Worse.
Absolutely.
But Bonucci did this loads in the game.
Yeah.
And I was trying to work out how to say it. I couldn't work out eventually the right way of framing this. But basically, he's just too big to pretend. I don't believe him ever. Not because I think he's a liar, but because when I look at him, he just looks like a statue made out of titanium or something.
Like he's been carved out of a metal.
If I punched him in the face, I would expect every bone in my hand to break.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so the idea that he's hurt by anything just seems ridiculous. And even in the case where he is legitimately fouled, I still don't believe him because he's Bonucci.
Ah.
But it was a lovely game. And I mean, the fun thing about it is that, at the beginning of the game, the Serie A title race, wide open. In a way I'd not expected. Juve, for most of the season, very far behind. It looked for a while like they weren't even going to finish in the top four, right? At the beginning of this game, if they'd won, they would have been within 3 points of first place AC Milan, who incidentally play Bologna tonight, so we don't know the outcome of that as we are speaking. But this was an enormous win for Inter, and I think the first away win at Juve in almost a decade is a very rare thing to have happened. So it would have taken an odd game to get there.
From Juventus' perspective, so I watched Sampdoria-Roma.
Yes.
Roma 1-1-0, and I think that was their 11th unbeaten game in a row. So they're still an outsider, but they could potentially snatch that fourth Champions League spot from Juventus Juventus continue to...
No, they're closing in.
Yeah.
But no,
Roma, I think, pretty good, actually. Overall,
both teams played very well. Juve were fantastic and just happened to lose the game. Inter had a performance that looked like champions, really. If AC Milan beat Bologna tonight, they'll be top of the league again. A friend of mine who is a supporter says that they will inevitably cock it up as they get towards the end. And also, you know, perhaps the squad isn't the strength of some of the others. But a fascinating title challenge. Napoli also in there, we should say. Napoli were second over the weekend. So, you know, exciting. I believe they beat Atalanta.
Interesting. So there was Roma are going to play Napoli in 2 weeks' time.
Big game.
And, big game. But anyway, towards the end of Roma's game in Sampdoria, Lorenzo Pellegrini was taken off as a injury time substitute. And he, on his way off the pitch, he removed his shin pads, untied his boots, readjusted his socks, and got a very, very obvious yellow card, which happens to mean that he will miss the Salernitana game now, not the Napoli one. That's worked out quite well, quite nicely for him.
That is funny.
Yeah.
That is funny.
That is Jose Mourinho's captain.
Okay. Yeah. Also worth just a little, one more little thing to give you a taste of this game. Locatelli was subbed off after 30 minutes after having been kicked in the head and then later in the midriff. This was the game we were playing. I mean, I think his eye was like, his forehead looked to be like swelling up over his eye. God. But this was the type of game that it was. A very feisty affair. And was it feisty, Seb, at Barcelona 1-0 Sevilla? Also, very important game for the La Liga title race.
Very. I feel like I've been doing lots and lots and lots of talking. Did JJ watch Barcelona Sevilla?
I think it's unlikely.
I didn't watch it, no, but I have seen, obviously, Pedri's goal. Cause
is it nice?
I love that guy.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
He's one of your favourite players.
Honestly, I think he's one of the best players in the world.
What did he do?
Genuinely.
I think that's the thing you've said more to me than any other thing.
I said when he's the best young players, like, he will be one of the best players. I think he already is. Sure. Like, he's astonishingly good, regardless of age.
Sure.
So Barcelona always play with these wide wingers. The goal comes from, I think it's a set piece, and the winger puts it, I think it's Dembele on the right, puts it back into the middle. Pedri's on the edge of the box next to someone else. Pretends to shoot on his left, takes about three players out, puts it onto his right, pretends to shoot, takes another like five players out. He'll just fall down like it's dominoes. And then he takes another stride for the third time, doesn't fake it, and just plants in the bottom corner to like settle it.
Nice.
Everything he does is amazing, but that's obviously him scoring a goal that wins the game, but everything he does in every game is...
Well, big player for perfect. A big game.
100%. Also, this was close for a while. Like Barcelona were probably in the ascendancy for most of it, but Sevilla had a couple of really good spells.
I've never heard anyone say that sentence outside of Pro Evo in real life.
Barcelona raised were in the it. Ascendancy.
Someone raised in the ascendancy.
No. Peter Bracken.
That says it quite a lot.
You know, fair enough. If you go with Bracken,
I really like it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, just... showing my roots and my age, unfortunately.
Have you seen the La Liga table before Xavi took over?
Yeah.
And where, so it was after now. 11 games, they were sitting in ninth place on 16 points, and now they are second and could legit make, well, I mean, they're a bit far behind Real there. They've got a game in hand and they're, what's it, 12 points behind? So it's not going to happen. But
I was legitimately impressed by Barcelona. I felt like Sevilla, coming to this game, only conceded 19 goals in La Liga, and that's in like 30 games.
Yeah, so quite they incredible, isn't
really,
it?
Really, really good defensive team. They're stubborn as hell.
Yeah.
But Barcelona, when they were good, they were all over them. Like Dembele against Rekic on the right. Rekic's really a centre half, not a fullback. Mm. And it showed. Dembele was excellent. Pedri was brilliant, as JJ said. Aubameyang a bit quiet, but like Barcelona, the patterns of their play, the patterns of their build-up were really good. They looked like they were on the cusp of creating a goal all the way through the game. And
they're looking sharp, aren't they?
They're looking sharp, but it's also the most fun I've had watching Barcelona in a really long time. At the beginning of the season, during the kind of what we'll call the Luke de Jong months, wasn't so much fun watching Barcelona. It was a little bit like, kind of might do my council tax, whatever. But this was really impressive.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What do you have to do with your council tax? Mine's just a direct debit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Well, the thing is...
And once a year, they send me a letter saying, this is how much you'll have to pay me over the next year, being the council.
Behind the curtain there, you've caught me out on a little... I mean, I use council tax as a kind of a proxy for something boring, and you've kind of exploded that
illusion. I think you meant taxes, but you said council, and then it's too... Because it's easy to pivot and just to ignore it, but you've highlighted it now.
The cadence in the sentence wasn't quite right with just income tax. I don't have to do it. Just... You know, you do that once a year.
Interesting.
You know, what I should say is like, I should have, instead of watching Barcelona.
I just wondered if there was some kind of special German tax that you had to do.
You have to make pension
instead of paying money, you have to go and do a thing as your tax, your penance.
You don't have to go and do a thing. Like, you don't have to go and like pick up a, you know,
pick up litter
and a millennium can or something.
Look after a cat.
No. Pick up a penguin.
Pick up a penguin today.
Hey. No. But basically, Luke de Jong was not a lot of fun when he played for Barcelona.
Sure.
Well done. For butchering that.
Well, no, it's good to know. It's good to understand where we are. Luke de Jong, not as much fun as having a direct debit with your council tax that you never have to think about ever. Not as much fun as that. That's good to know. Sevilla, interesting. Sevilla haven't won a game in five now, according to the league table. Four draws in a row and then a loss to Barcelona.
They were second lost three games all season, including that's the third defeat of the season.
Wow. Very impressive.
I feel like.
They were up there. They're still fourth place.
Injury difficulties. They've got a problem with scoring goals.
Okay.
Anthony Martial's not working there, really. He had an okay game, but I don't think I've ever seen anyone look as miserable playing professional football as Anthony Martial does.
I agree.
He just hates it.
Well, maybe he does, or maybe that's just his face, you know?
It might just be his face, but then...
If you saw me on the tube, if I wasn't wearing a mask,
people. You're not. No, I would say look at this. There's a menace to you. No, that's grumpy. That's not the same. That's not hate. No, it's not hate.
Martial doesn't look like he has hate.
He really does not.
No,
like
I refuse. I refuse that one. Not allowed.
He is not going to be a Sevilla player next season.
I think that's probably unlikely, but you know, still.
But yeah, they need goals.
I wish luck to the boy.
Yes, of course. But Sevilla need goals. Enesri came back off the bench, but Rafa Mir as well, he's there. But they need a couple more, you know, a 20 goal a season player, and they'd have competed for the title. But
sure.
Alas.
Sure. Okay, fine. Well, I'm just trying to find the World Cup draw, but it turns out it's impossible to find.
So I wonder if I can remember it off the top of my head.
Here we go. I've got it now. Thank goodness that you're not going to have to remember it, JJ. Group A.
I could, though.
All right, fine. Tell me Group A.
Qatar,
yes. I mean, they are the hosts. Yeah. And therefore
Ecuador.
Yes, Ecuador.
Netherlands.
Yes.
And Senegal.
Are you correct. Cheating somehow?
No, I'm not.
You're genuinely not cheating.
I don't have, I've got the league table on this thing.
We should also say, of course, as the Netherlands have been brought up, terribly sad news about Louis van Gaal announced over the weekend.
All the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What a fun guy. Love Louis van Gaal. Yeah.
Do honest. Recover.
Yeah. That is Group A. Well done. Very successful. Group B.
England.
Yes.
Islamic Republic of Iran.
Sure. That's a strange way of saying it.
I don't remember. United States of America.
I think Iran is fine.
And then, I'll say Iran. United States of America, and then one of Ukraine, Wales, or Scotland.
Yeah.
In your heart of hearts, who is that third team?
Probably Wales,
isn't it? I did a joke tweet about England. England against Iran, right? England are not as good as I think a lot of English fans think.
And Iran are better than English fans.
But so England have some of the best players in the world, right? They do.
Sure.
But they play very conservative. And what I can see happening in this group, and I'll be dead wrong, but this is what I see happening, is that Iran will be really defensive, very hard to break down, and England don't put enough players forward to be able to break them down, and they don't win, they draw.
I can tell you what's going to happen in this group. You ready to hear what's going
to happen? There'll be a mistake against America.
No.
And America will be pumped up.
I will not let you continue.
And they will draw.
Have you forgotten what happened to us during the Euros?
So you
weren't allowed to say bad things. Here's what's going to happen.
Doesn't remember Joe fell at me properly.
You're absolutely right. Iran will play defensively. Iran, a very, very, very good team, should not be underestimated. England will win that game 1-0. England will beat the United States of America 5-0. Come at me, America. I don't care. I've got hot fever. I'm getting fever.
I'm
excited too. Now, explain to me what's happening. Ukraine and Scotland, the game has not been rebooked.
There's no, I think. It's someone, I can't remember who it is, wants that to be then postponed further to June. I think it's already been postponed to May, and it'll be pushed further. I mean,
so this is the little semi-final, and then there's the final of qualification.
Wales
playing one of Scotland or Ukraine.
Yeah, it's at Hampden, so Ukraine will win.
Okay.
So
I can't have hope, because the times I've done leads to disappointment.
Ukraine a good team as well. Ukraine should beat Scotland and Wales.
Yeah, well, I think Scotland.
True.
Yeah, jump again. Well, yeah, there we go.
So let me say, as a man who lived in Wales for 7 years.
And you did, yeah. When we first met, you were living in Wales.
I would support Wales. I enjoy Wales to perform well. I do. And their Euros, was it Euros that they went so far in? Semi-final
Euros. 2016.
What a story that was.
That was great.
Loved it. Gareth Bale, bring me home. Let's do it.
Al Robson Kanu now selling crypto, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Good to know.
Really into it. Yeah.
Good to know. Okay, Group C. This is going to run on a little bit, but you just, if you think you can.
Argentina?
Yes, if it helps you in the future, I can give you the first team.
No, I think I can do it all.
How are you doing?
I don't know. I'm terrible at remembering anything apart from weirdly this, because I remember all the flags being lovely colours and switch stick.
Fine.
All I like about things is colours.
Argentina.
Argentina, Mexico?
Yes.
Argentina, Mexico is classic World Cup. That feels very World Cup-ish.
That's absolutely great.
I am now struggling for who this next one is.
Well, I can give you some clues. I don't want you. I'm now in the point where I wanted you to fail initially, and now I don't want you to.
Yeah.
Okay, how about this?
Think of great cuisine.
No, don't do that. That's very, very confusing. That's absolutely not the right thing. Think of vodka.
Poland?
Yes, Poland.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, of course, the most famous thing about Poland is vodka.
And then is it an African team, the final one?
Well, no, but not far from North Africa, just to the east there, in the Gulf. The largest country of the Gulf.
Oh, it's the United Arab Emirates?
No, that's a pretty small one. The big one that covers almost the entire Gulf. Lots of oil.
But what we're learning here is that
JJ can remember things okay, but he doesn't know basic facts.
If you tell him a lot about the thing that you need him to name.
Well, this
country. Saudi Arabia.
Yes, there we go.
I forgot they were in it. Yeah, that's okay. The nice green one with all the bits.
So just to recap, because that was a long one. Argentina, Mexico, Poland, and Saudi Arabia. Lovely. That's a fun group, that is. That's a real fun group. Group D begins with...
What's the boring one? It's France. Denmark.
Yes.
There's another team that they keep playing each other, which is an African team, isn't it?
It is a North African team, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Algeria, are they in it? No,
Tunisia.
Tunisia, that's the one.
Yeah. And then one of either the UAE, Australia, or Peru. Quite exciting. Yeah. Group E, I don't know why we're reading through this. I mean, we were only doing it because you could guess, but do you want to try with Group E? It's a big one. Two big teams in here.
Oh, Spain, Germany.
Oh, yes.
That'll be great.
That will be great.
That'll be good.
Arsene Wenger managed here for some time.
Japan.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also one of... never mind. It's always a risk when you go to country-related jokes. Costa Rica versus New Zealand will be the playoff there. Group F, of course.
I can't remember. Is it Brazil now we're on to?
No, this is Belgium's group.
Oh, do you know what? I can't remember this now. Let's just do it properly.
Yes. Well, Belgium will be in a group with Morocco, Croatia, and Canada.
Yeah.
Very exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing Canada play. I have some Canadian family who will be supporting Canada. And Group G is Brazil's group. Brazil are in that group with Switzerland, Serbia, and Cameroon.
Switzerland-Serbia is a game.
Yes,
that is a game.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a game. Group H, Portugal, Uruguay, South Korea, and Ghana. I'm quite excited.
Can see Portugal getting knocked out of that.
Yeah.
I'm already really excited for this World Cup. Yeah.
Can I just say, funny. It's a funny thing, isn't it? It's a funny thing because this World Cup has obviously been probably the most talked about for many years now, for all the very obvious reasons that TIFO has covered alongside lots of other, you know.
We'll continue to cover as well.
We've got some
illustrated stuff coming out on that.
Major media outlets. Lots of discussions of sports washing, you know, and I think as part of the coverage, a discussion around what is sports washing? How does it work? When is it most effective? Yeah, all of that just pales when I see the World Cup draw. Is my point. Like, I imagine people all around the world will be feeling the same way. I see the draw.
They knew it as well.
That's entirely the point.
I didn't expect it beforehand. And then as soon as I saw the groups, I just felt excited. And it was almost as if all of the reasons I know to be true of why this shouldn't be happening and of why we should be skeptical of it and all of the coverage that Seb said we will continue to do. And personally, I will make sure I'm more focused on because of how I feel now, just disappeared for a few minutes. As I felt only excitement and joy. Well, anyway, I say that as, you know, semi-lighthearted, mostly serious point. That's how it works. It's right there, right there. And
we
spent like 4 or 5 years covering it in depth, being excruciatingly aware of all of the even the minor elements of this. And then the draw is released, and all I feel, I'm floating on a cloud with World Cup joy.
But this is the point, though, isn't it? It's because you have this, and you have the discussion. What we've had 10 years of discussion about this,
yeah.
And then there's a little voice in your head who thinks, "Yeah, but my reward for that is to enjoy a World Cup, which is the pinnacle of the sport that you love."
Yeah.
And yet, the way tournaments are hosted, the way sport is run, gives you this kind of moral quandary between the thing you love and the thing that you know is right.
Yeah.
And that's the entire point of it.
Yeah.
Which is a horrible, horrible realization, but it is what it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's also an odd one because of our position here. Our job is to cover it, right? And I feel happy about that as well as feeling sad about it.
Because we know that we can cover both sides of it. And we know we have faith in our ability to do that and to do it right and fairly. And we will do both of those things, but we will give due attention to every aspect.
There we go.
That was a weird... JJ, say something funny. Make a noise.
Rah!
We got it on camera.
There it is.
He does do weird things.
That's the end. This is a long podcast, but I feel like there was a lot to get through today. JJ Bull, the bullet. Thank you. Sebastian Stafford Ball. Sebastian Stafford Ball. That really was just an accident.
Freudian slip.
Thanks, as usual, to producer Dom.
Very welcome.
Today, yes. and also producer Adonis, and or whichever poor freelancer is editing today's episode. Hello, freelancer. Well done for getting this far.
Thank you.
Thank you to the listeners. And we will be back next week with much of the same. Au revoir.